Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. This week's podcast is brought to you by AgroZen Life Sciences. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks so much for joining us this week. On this week's podcast, we'll hear from Joe Hickey from Kentucky and Halcyon420.com. And just let me start by saying that I have used the term pioneer to describe a lot of folks in the hemp industry, but not many people go back as far as Joe Hickey and his 1996 court battle with Kentucky involving actor and environmental activist Woody Harrelson. You remember who Woody from Cheers and other shows, of course, major movie star. And Woody got arrested all in the name of hemp just for you, and we'll explain how that happened here in a moment. But first of all, Joe, how you doing? And thanks for being on the program with us.
Great, Jason. It's great to be with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, and we certainly do appreciate you being with us. So, Joe, let's set this up now. You had Woody Harrelson in Kentucky, and you had him plant 4 hemp seeds. The reason you had him plant exclusively 4 hemp seeds is because that was considered at the time a misdemeanor. 5 hemp seeds would have been a felony, and of course, Woody did not want a felony on his record. So you guys set up a scheme where he planted 4 hemp seeds, and then you personally called the cops on Woody. So this certainly should be an interesting story. Why don't you set this up for us and tell us what happened?
Well, somebody's got to protect the general public from Woody, so I figured I'd be the one.
you need that on a t-shirt.
Right. But actually, I started 4 years earlier. It's been 1992.
Okay.
And my dad was an antique dealer, so he had these old newspapers bound up in books. Like each month they would have, you know, the whole month bound up in these big books the size of newspapers. Mm-hmm. And I was going through it, and I ran across this article that said F.G. Clay resigns from the Kentucky Hemp Growers Co-op. And, you know, there's tobacco co-ops here in Kentucky, so, but it just struck me like, what the heck, you know? So anyway, long story short, I looked into it, found out that it was some of the top farmers in central Kentucky that had incorporated the co-op. And F.G. Clay was one of the bigger farmers, well-known farmers here. And he was asked by Roosevelt to come and run the Hemp for Victory program. So after that, you know, I went over to Frankfurt to look and see if there was a corporation. They said, nope, nothing here. So I'm leaving, I'm walking down the hall, and it's one of those things that, you know, you take a few more steps and your life changes because fairly
right.
And I didn't even hear what he said, but I was the only one around, so I figured he was, you know, so I'd stick my head back in. I said, did you say something? He said, yeah. He said, what year was that? I said, 42, probably around that. He said, well, hell, that wouldn't be in our computers anyway. So anyway, he finds all these corporation papers, and then from there I just started looking it to Europe, where it was legal. They were growing it in France. Mm-hmm. And I spoke with the minister of hemp, which they had a minister of hemp in France at the time, and he said there's a guy in Canada, Ian Lowe, that was growing it. So I get in contact with Ian, and then he said there's a guy in Canada that's petitioning because they're under the EC rules in Canada.
Right.
They're petitioning. This guy's name's Joe Strobel, so made all these connections, collected all this information about the history in central Kentucky. There was still equipment around, and we were collecting all that. And so in 94, and another one, he said, I never listened to the radio. So the radio, for some reason, was on, and it said, Brereton Jones, who was the governor, is having an open door at 4. So anybody that wants to talk to him about anything can go over there. So I tell my wife, I said, let's go talk to the governor. She said, you're crazy. I don't disagree with her a lot, but so we go over, meet with the governor, and I lay everything out. And he looked at me and he says, Joe, he said, if you were governor, he said, well, you know, what would you do? I said, well, I'd form a task force to see if what I'm telling you is true or not. Mm-hmm. And he looked at me, so I have no doubt what you're, you know, everything you show me is correct. And I said, well, it's not as much that, governor, as it is you know, if you form a task force, then it's going to give credence to whatever the outcome is versus you just saying it.
Sure, sure.
And he said, I think you're right, Joe. And he looks over at his ag guy and says, I want you to work with Joe and let's get it going. So that was kind of the impetus. But after that, we reincorporated the Kentucky Hemp Growers Co-op, started going to Farm Bureau meetings, had some of the top farmers in Central Kentucky on the board. Jake Graves, who was a pillar of the community and head of this bank, Chairman Emeritus, and he became the chairman of the Kentucky Hemp Growers Co-op.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
He gave us credibility. So that was kind of the beginning of it in 92 when it really took off.
What was your catalyst for doing this? I mean, right now, most of the people got involved with the 2014 Farm Bill, then the 2018 Farm Bill. So there was something tangible, something legitimate, a legitimate industry for folks to get involved in. But you were creating the industry. What else were you doing back in 94 and 96 when this was going on? Were you retired at the time, or how did you have that kind of time to put into this?
Well, what happened is I'd been in Central America in Belize building roads and bridges, and the government changed on us overnight, and I had all my equipment left in the jungle. Came back here and was trying to decide what I was going to do, and I stumbled upon this. And, you know, I had enough income at the time to really concentrate on it, and
okay.
Then when I got into it, you know, we started a company, but you know, it was just this kind of evolution. If when I was in Belize, if a few other people had voted a different way, I would have still been in Belize. You know, if I walked a few more steps through the Capitol, I would have never heard the guy, and this would have never happened.
And we may never have been here where we are right now. So that is
right.
Amazing how little things.
Turned the radio on that day, you know, that wouldn't have happened.
Right.
So you had the
governor on your side. You had the top ag guy in Kentucky on your side. You had some of the top farmers on your side. And
right.
From there, where did you go?
Well, what happened was one of my friends I was working with knew Woody. And I guess he told Woody about me, and he's, you know, because we were getting a lot of PR. We were getting in the newspaper a lot, you know, doing all these shows. And
mm-hmm.
just, you know, we had a great PR machine going. So he had heard about it. So my phone rings one day, and my son, Joe Jr., answered the phone. I guess he was like 17 or 18 at the time. And
mm-hmm.
So Woody says, you know, I'd like to speak with Joe Hickey. And Joe says, well, this is Joe. And he knew it was a younger guy. And he said, I think maybe your dad. So Joe comes in and says, Dad, said Woody Harrelson's on the phone for you. And of course, I'm thinking it's a joke or, you know, someone's just pulling my leg.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I get on and, you know, it sounded like Woody. And so we talked for about 45 minutes. And he said, well, I'd like to come in and meet you. That was on a Tuesday. He came in on a Thursday. And then Thursday, he's called Laura and Denny, his daughter. He called Laura and they brought Denny in. She was 1 year old then. I think she's 25 now.
Okay.
And so they came in and hung out for a few more days. And then that's how Woody and I, you know, became, you know, friends and more or less like brothers.
And why did he have the interest in hemp at that time?
Well, his interest was in sustainability.
Okay.
And trying to create a paradigm where people were, you know, living, you know, we did the Soul Tours, a simple organic living. So it's all about trying to figure out how to live in harmony with nature,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Mm-hmm.
So his interest was to help the farmers get back to what they were doing before, you know, the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act.
Right.
And so that was his interest. And, you know, so when he was in, he just says, how can I help? What can I do? And I went, well, you know, we'll figure something out. But so from there, you know, we just came up with some ideas. We did a term paper for high school and grade school, an essay contest.
Mm-hmm.
So that we got a lot of PR for that. Woody had climbed the Golden Gate Bridge. I think that was in 95 or 6, maybe, I guess. But so Woody was shooting The People versus Larry Flint at the time.
Okay, great movie.
So, yeah, so that was, I think it was one of the better roles. If anybody had met or seen anything that about Larry or heard his voice, Woody just knocked it out of the park on it. I mean, it was great. But anyway, so Woody and I were sitting there, and, you know, one of the things that the legislator in Kentucky had done, they had, you know, in the federal law, it says you have an exception. You know, marijuana is this except for the seeds, the stems, and whatever else it said. And so Kentucky had this guy, friend of mine that was running for governor a bunch of times, on legalizing cannabis altogether.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so this was kind of a jab at him. They struck that portion out of the law.
Oh, okay.
So at that point, up to four seeds was a misdemeanor, five seeds was a felony. And regardless of what it was, because there's no exception now.
Sure. So, and they were lumping that the hemp seed right along with the marijuana seeds, or did they differentiate?
It was all illegal.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Cannabis was legal. Illegal, regardless of what it was, once they took the exceptions out.
Mm-hmm. So even if they found the one seed, that was a misdemeanor?
Misdemeanor.
Okay.
Four seeds, misdemeanor. Five seeds, a felony.
Okay, gotcha.
So, you know, we came up with the idea, and Woody was kind of like, you know, to know the law, you have to test the law. So, and he was, you know, in the spirit of Larry, trying to, you know, speak truth to power.
What was he in the middle of filming that movie, or had he just finished filming the movie?
No, I think he was finished.
Okay. So he was riding kind of a high there, because that movie did very well.
Yeah. And so, you know, we talked about it, and Woody said, well, you know, okay, let's see what we can do. So I went and met with a friend of mine who's an attorney, and I said, look, Woody wants to plant four seeds. We want to get arrested, and we want to take it through the court system. So we need a prosecutor that is going to prosecute this thing. If we're found not guilty, or if Woody's found not guilty, then we want him to appeal it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're successful, or if he's successful, then we'll appeal it.
Like most people are looking for a not guilty verdict. You guys were hoping for a guilty verdict.
It didn't make any difference, because whoever was found guilty was going to, or, you know, mm-hmm. who didn't prevail was going to appeal. So it didn't make any difference.
Okay, I see.
Lose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, win is fun, but, you know. So so with that in mind, Woody had a friend. He'd worked for Greenpeace.
Mm-hmm.
I'll think of his name in a second. But he'd gone to work, Peter Bayhuth. And so Peter had gone to work with CNN. Ted Turner was giving away that, you know, what it was, $200 or $300 million at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in charge of it. And so we were thinking, okay, in order to do this, you know, let's get CNN through Peter, who's worked directly with Ted and Jane at the time. So we got the CNN crew up here. And what I did is, I had a conference, the first international hemp conference in Lexington, Kentucky, and invited, we had people from Australia, France, Germany. We had some Ukrainians come over.
And what year would this have been?
This was 96 when
Okay.
Woody seeds. This whole thing was orchestrated So what we did is we had this conference, invited all these people, the hemp experts from around the world to come in, and we had some French, certified French hemp seed. So we had, at the time we had gone and we were doing these essay contests with a teacher called, her name was Donna Cockrell. And so I told Donna, I said, you know, we're going to have this conference on Saturday and we're going to plant the seeds on Sunday, but Friday, why don't we bring all these experts to your class and let them educate your kids about hemp. Mm-hmm. And so, so that's what we did and went in her class. You know, she ended up in a lot of trouble over it and eventually got fired. And, you know, she prevailed in the end again. Mm-hmm. Was she
hesitant to let you guys come in and do that in the first place, or was she excited?
She was excited.
Okay.
And the kids loved it. I mean, it was, everybody had a great time. It was just the parents. And at the time, saying that, you know, Woody's not a good role model because I think Natural Born Killers had come out then or something.
Ah, okay. Right, right.
And, you know, he's played Larry Flint. So, you know, people can't distinguish the real person and a talent with, you know, what reality is. So anyway, we have that event at, in Simpsonville Elementary. So on Saturday, it was on the front page, you know, about Woody going to the class and everything, and all the Dare, the lady that taught Dare had a quote in there condemning, you know, talking to the kids about this, and the parents were, you know, so we get on the front page. So Saturday we have the conference. So on Sunday we're on the front page again. And on Sunday we go to Beattyville and, you know, planted the seeds, called the cops, got him arrested, bailed, you know, got him bailed out.
And okay. Hold on. Now okay. You called the cops and got him arrested. We don't want to gloss over that. Now, you guys planted the seeds, and you planted five specifically or four? Planted four, so he was only arrested. And, okay, you planted the four seeds, then you called the cops. Now, I want to know, when you called the police, what did you literally say to them to get them to, like, hey, I just saw a guy plant four, Woody Harrelson plant four hemp seeds. You better come out here and bring the SWAT team? Or how did that phone call go down?
Well, I had a phone number, and they were expecting. There's a tractor going by.
That's all right. Little ambiance doesn't hurt anything.
Right. That's what you get in farm country.
That's right.
So when you know, well, let me back up. We go in town. We get there. We go to the Commonwealth Attorney's office, and Woody is going to buy, or not buy, he's going to do a year lease on 1 acre of land.
Okay.
So we go in, sign the lease, and then we drive out to where we're going to do it. And so we have CNN with us, and so Woody starts getting the grubbing hole out, just picking a spot out, just start digging in there. So CNN's filming it, you know, and Woody's he's starting to work up a sweat.
Right.
He's talking about how farming's, you know, tough job, you know, just joking around. And so, then I called the sheriff's office, but, you know, they knew that I was going to call.
Okay.
I said, I want to report a crime in progress. And so, they come out, and, you know, the sheriff doesn't have his lights on. He just pulls up, you know, and gets out, meanders over to where we are. He's kind of a heavyset older guy. And he said, what's going on here? And Woody holds his hands out and has those four seeds. He said, well, he said, I got four hemp seeds here, officer. And he said, I'm going to plant these seeds. And so he sprinkles them on the ground and kind of pats them in and everything. And so that the sheriff looks at Woody, he says, do you realize that you're under arrest? And he said, yes, sir. He said, okay. He said, retrieve those seeds for me. And so Woody gets down and he's trying to, it was funny because, you know, the seeds look like, you know, they're the color of dirt anyway.
Right, right, right.
And he can't find the seeds. And the sheriff said, okay, so that's right. So, you know, so we go and they handcuff him and put him in the car. And then the film crew and everybody follows him down to the jail. And we go in. And then, you know, they do this quick interview, you know, how old are you? Where were you born? You know, what's your occupation? What is going actor? Mm-hmm. And sheriff looked at him. He said, you got any Oscars? And Woody looked at him and kind of dejected. He said, you know, I'd have heard a guy.
So the sheriff did not know that who Woody was?
Yeah, he knew who he was, but he didn't know if, you know, you're back in the country when you get in Beattyville. So he probably knew who he was, but I doubt if he had seen many of Woody's movies.
I got you.
So we bailed him out. And then from there, that's where it started. And then, you know, we go to the first hearing and I'm trying to think, it was, I think they found him not guilty. Or no, they found him guilty, and then so we appealed it, and then it went to the circuit court, and we won in the second circuit, mm-hmm. In the second court, and so then they appealed it to the Court of Appeals, and then the Court of Appeals kind of did a convoluted ruling, didn't make any sense, but they sent it back to the circuit court, or to the what's the one below circuit?
I would have no idea.
Yeah, but anyway, so we go back and we have a full trial, and so a friend of mine was Governor Louis Nunn. He was the governor back when Nixon mm-hmm. was president, mm-hmm. and he told me a lot of stories about being in the Oval Office and crazy stuff you wouldn't believe. But anyway.
That's another podcast or just a private phone call there. I'd like to hear some of that.
So anyway, I talked to him and, you know, he's a right-wing Republican law and order kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And but he's an older, you know, older guy. He remembered, you know, him and everything. And you know, through all this time, we had educated the Kentucky.
So he was old enough to understand the difference between hemp and marijuana back when people were not discussing the difference.
No, he knew 100%, mm-hmm. and he knew what we were trying to do. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't trying to get marijuana legal. We were trying to do something to help the farmers.
Right, right.
And so he agreed to do the closing arguments in Woody's case, and. There's a lot of things that happened, but I'll tell you two things that were really poignant was that, you know, we had meetings before the trial to talk about, you know, what to do and how we're going to do it and everything. And so the day of the trial, I just happened to bring a hemp bar with me, and I gave it to the governor. I said, you know, if you get an opportunity, I said, you know, if you can use this, you know, have at it. And so he puts in his coat. So anyway, he's going through, the prosecutor's talking about how Woody is only here because he's trying to legalize marijuana and, you know, all this stuff. And so then when Governor Nunn gets up, you know, he's telling them, you know what jury nullification is, Jason?
Sure.
Okay. You're not supposed to do that in court.
Okay.
And so Governor Nunn sitting there going, you know, they make laws, you know, everybody make laws, but you're the last bastion of where where the public gets to say whether the law is just or not. And the he's the governor, so, you know, and the judge is like letting him go. Mm-hmm. Nuts. So he's going, you know, you guys, you know, they're doing it, they're growing this all over the world, but, you know, you're going to arrest a guy here because of a law that doesn't make any sense. And so he pulls out that hemp bar that I gave him, and he starts opening up, and he looks at the judge, and he said, with the permission of the court, he's kind of glanced at the judge and starts opening the bar up. He said, I'm going to take a bite of this. He didn't ask for permission. He just said, with permission of the court, I'm going to take a bite. So he opens it up, takes a bite, and he's looking at the jurors back and forth, just chewing it away. He must chew on that thing for, I don't know, it seemed like forever. And so then he just, he makes a big gulp, and he's looking at the jurors. He says, and he holds the other half of the bar up. He says, well, ladies and gentlemen, the jury, he said, I got it on me and I got it in me. He said, so if you're going to convict this man right over here, he said, you're going to have to convict me too. Mm-hmm. And you could just see the look on their face and everything.
Hmm. Now, at the time, again, he was the former governor at the time.
Former governor.
Former governor. Okay, gotcha.
In like the early 70s.
Okay.
Late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So the prosecutor already talked about how Woody was trying to legalize marijuana and everything. And so the way he closed his argument was, ladies and gentlemen, jury, he said, my esteemed colleague here, our prosecutor, Tom Jones, he said, my client, Woody Harrelson, is here simply because he wants to legalize marijuana. And he walks over and Tom Jones is writing, he's busy. He's writing down on his table and everything. And he said, ladies and gentlemen, jury, he said, if I thought that for 1 minute, and he takes his hand and slams down on the table, he said, I'd be sitting at this table right here. When he slams, and then Tom Jones jumped, he wasn't expecting that at all.
Made him flinch.
And then he just looks at the jurors and he says, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And then he turns around, walks away and sits down. And that's how it ended. It was incredible.
Hmm. And then the verdict.
Well, the jury leaves, and then the jury was not, they're not gone. I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, 25 minutes. It wasn't long. And they come back in, and I start looking at them, and I'm sitting next to Woody, and I'm going, it's not guilty. And Woody, he said, how could you possibly know that? And I was going, because as they coming in, they've all looked at you. And I said, if they voted against you, they wouldn't even look at you. He said, you think so? I said, I'm guaranteeing you it's not guilty. And so I looked at my watch. It was exactly 4:20 in the afternoon. And I was going, boy, that is a
your life is just full of coincidences, Joe.
You wouldn't believe it. It's crazy. I'm writing a book about it. So at some point, this will all come out, and it'll be a whole lot more detail.
Oh, sure. So then obviously the verdict was not guilty, and this was not on the misdemeanor counts.
Yes.
Okay. At no point was he brought up on federal or other charges.
No.
And now let's back up for a second. At any point, did the prosecutor or anybody down there, again, you're in Kentucky, you've got this movie star, a guy who obviously was on Cheers forever in every household, but at that time, as you said, Natural Born Killers, the Larry Flint movie, he was rising, his star was certainly rising at the time, and here he is in Beattyville, Kentucky. At any time, did anybody say, look, this is a circus, this is a joke, and this is not going to come out properly because of his celebrity status? And in other words, could he have been, if he was just an average Joe, so to speak, would he have been convicted versus not being convicted, do you think, of that misdemeanor charge?
I don't think so. I don't think there would have been, because see, at that time, I'll back up to like 93, 92, 93, me and this other friend of mine had started also before the thing, the 4-H club.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we started the 4F clubs. It's the Future Fiber Fuel Farmers of America.
Okay.
And so we were, that's how we originally started to have something to go talk to the legislators about. And so we met with them, and they were going, look, we know the difference between hemp and marijuana, but the public doesn't, so we wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole. You guys educate the public, then we'll do something.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the goal all along. Everything we were doing was to educate the public. The essay contests. We did a you know, all these Farm Bureau shows. We went to the National Farm Bureau meeting and got their support at the National Convention. And so we were doing all this, and we had some friendly guys at the Lexington paper that would, you know, give us, you know, print. And so, you know, getting all this, and then what, before we got to the legislators, what we did a survey with the University of Kentucky, and it came back that, was it 96% of people strongly or somewhat favor allowing farmers, Kentucky farmers, to grow hemp. Mm-hmm. So we took that and went to the legislators. And this was, Woody was found not guilty in 2000. This was 2001. And so we took that survey and sent it to all of the legislators. And the other thing we did, we got a box and we put all of these creams, all the stuff, the hemp stuff, and we shipped it to every single legislator in Kentucky. We sent it to their wives. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, if your wife, and she tries some of this great, you know, cream made with hemp oil. So we were doing all that. So then, you know, when it came time for this bill to pass, or when we put the bill up, we went and met with the president of the Senate, because we knew it already passed the House. And we said, if we get the votes, are you going to let this pass? Let it go to the floor for a vote. Mm-hmm. He said, sure, if you guys can get the votes, he said, I'll let it be heard on the floor. So we started lobbying, and we got enough votes. But he wasn't letting it hit the floor. Mm. Didn't look like he was going to. He was just.
And this this was the state Senate leader.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, David Williams was his name.
Okay.
So I went and talked to the governor, and you know he lived 15, 20 miles from the Capitol, and lived in this big old colonial home. And I went over and I said, look, you know, this is what's going on. You know, we've got the votes. He said, are you sure you have the votes? I said, yeah, we got the vote, Governor. And he said, hop in the car. So, and he drives 80, 90 mile an hour everywhere he goes.
Well, he's the governor.
Oh, yeah. So we get over there. I've been with him when he got stopped before. Anyway, we get over there and he walks in David's office and he tells me, he said, just wait, you know. And so he walks in. And we walk into the office, and the secretary, you know, he says hello. He says, "Oh, how you doing, Governor?" And he just kind of walks over towards the door to go into Dave's office. And she said, "Governor, he has somebody with him." And he's going, "Well, that's fine." You know, he just walks on in.
He's going to have another person with him,
right? And so, you know, a few minutes later, this guy walks out, and then about 5 minutes later, the governor comes out, and he said, "Let's go." And so we're walking down the hall. He said, "It's going to be heard on the floor tomorrow." So we show up the next day, it passes, and what gave us the leg up on all the other states when the Farm Bill passed was in the 2001 bill, I had the forethought of, you know, I was thinking if they pass legislation federally, you know, we can pass, all the states can pass any legislation they want. You can pass all the legislation you want, doesn't do any good until the federal law is passed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we designed the bill as a research bill through the universities, and nobody can vote against research.
Sure.
So it's only a research bill, and it didn't have any teeth in it. But at the end of it, the last sentence said, Kentucky immediately adopts any and all federal rules and regulations pertaining to industrial hemp. So what that did is when the Farm Bill passed in 2014, we knew that when it passed, we didn't have to go back to the state legislature and
right.
Set something in place, because now we've already have research, and that the federal bill was kind of the same thing, because Mitch McConnell, being from Kentucky, knew the way he crafted it that Kentucky would be able to take off.
That explains a lot. That's a hole that I did not understand for the last couple of years, how Kentucky was able to jump in ahead of everybody. That actually lays it all out perfectly.
That one sentence did it.
That's amazing. And again, this one sentence, though, this was put in, again, in 2001, or at what point was that? 2001. So it took 13 years for the national bill to finally hit. But again, once it did, you guys were there in the driver's seat and ready to roll, and that's why you were ahead of everybody before the 2018 farm bill.
Well, and then also the other issue was, where are you going to get your hemp seed at? So what we've done early on in 92 and 93, a buddy of mine that had, he at the time worked for the University of Kentucky, he would go out to the farms and teach them how to grow vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knew all these farmers. So he knew that the farmers had hemp growing on their property.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so we started going out. And at the time, the DEA had a bounty basically on hemp. And what they were doing is they would go out to these farms and they would wait until the seed was dropping. Then they would go out and cut it down because they could come back the next year and cut it down again. Hmm. And they were getting, I think, $5 a stalk or something. So
the DEA was getting $5 per stalk?
Well, the DEA was just local sheriffs.
Okay.
State police.
Okay.
So if they went out and busted a field with 1,000 plants in it, you know, and they get $5 a plant, that's $5,000 that they get.
Ah, okay.
So this, like a reoccurring income from them every year, so they don't cut it early. They wait till the seed would drop.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we would go out and collect all these seeds, and then in I think it was 98, Woody and I and Anita Roddick, who owned the body shop. It's a big cosmetic thing for women.
Okay,
you'll see it in some of the airports. But anyway. So we started a company in Canada. It was the first company that processed hemp, grew and processed it. So we took the seeds from Kentucky, and we had a seed breeder from Hungary. So they crossed the Kentucky, wild Kentucky seed with the Hungarian seed. And that was the crop that we had. And we named it after Woody's daughter. We called it Denny.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a seed that Kinex used for 4 years. And that seed, you know, we end up shutting Kinex down because of the DEA, of course, again, mm-hmm. you know, giving us trouble coming into the United States with hemp seed and some of the fiber.
Okay.
So, but anyway, we had seed up there. So when the farm bill passed in 2014, we not only were able to get in the ground, we had a bill that got the universities involved. The university had already been educated, so everybody was on board there. The bill had already passed, so it was like this perfect storm. And so we went and met with Jamie Comer, who at the time was the ag commissioner,
mm-hmm.
and we told him, you know, we want to plant out on the Gray's farm. And he was going, sure, you know. And he said, so where are you going to get seed? And we kind of looked at each other and we're going, well, we have some seed, but it's not here in the state. And he just said, looked at us, he said, the only thing I can tell you, if there's seed in the state, it's legal.
Hmm.
And I said, okay, so I just had some of our Denny seed FedEx down to us, and that's how we planted our first crop.
And what year was this?
This would have been 2014.
Okay. And so that first crop, how many acres?
I think that was like, must have been about 4 or 5 acres, I guess.
Would that have been the first crop in the United States? Under that farm bill?
Went under the farm bill.
Legal. Obviously, farmers were growing it secretly, but I mean, as far as the research and that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. We, you know, and there's other states that say, well, we grew first, but, you know, mm-hmm. you know, everybody's going to say that.
But well, again, if you have a seed and you drop it in the ground, you've planted the seed theoretically first, but it's not. I was going for the research side and something that could be documented for, is current hemp crops.
Well, because Dave West, I'm trying to think what year that was, but Dave West planted a legal hemp crop with a DEA permit. So we didn't have a DEA permit.
Oh, okay.
But so he planted hemp on a Dole pineapple plantation. I don't think what year that was, but
and where would that have been? What state would that have been in?
No, that was in Hawaii. That was on Oahu.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And well, what made me think about that was, you know, when you're saying, you know, put it, you know, drop a seed and you can say that you planted it. But we were up there and he was, you know, back then you had to have he had a small container, you know, one of the 20-foot containers.
Mm-hmm.
It had a big lock on it, and you go in, and he built a wall halfway back that had another lock in it. And then you walk through that, and it had a safe in there that you open it up, and the seed was in. That's how it was, you know, DEA permit.
Right.
So he's showing me what he's, you know, and he had to have a fence all the way around it, had to have barbed wire on top. All this crazy stuff that the DEA had him do.
That's amazing. And, so they still haven't let up.
No, they're still right in the middle of it. So the he's going to plant, you know, the ceremony's the next day, but we're out there and he's showing me everything, and he opened the safe up and shows me the seed, and I reach in there and grab a few and look at it, and then we he locks everything back up. We go outside, and he had the ground worked up beautifully. And I said, Dave, and he looked over at me, and I opened my hand up, and I had a seed in it. I put it down the ground. I planted. I said, first legal in the United States. I said, I just planted it. He looked at me. He said, I won't tell you the cuss word he said.
But nobody else witnessed it. So as far as the world was concerned,
right.
it didn't happen.
Just him and I.
That's great.
But, you know, the whole thing that is going on now, and what I say, because everything that we did was to help the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
Because the tobacco was going out, and we knew that it was gone. And so that was always our intent. So when the farm bill passed, and then all of a sudden this CBD crave came about, and that's where all the early money was, and everybody went that direction. And I always say that CBD hijacked the hemp industry. And because, you know, CBD is not going to be a crop that like corn or soybeans that every farmer is going to use it for rotation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's more like CBD is more of a horticultural crop versus an agricultural crop.
Right. So your focus is mostly on the industrial side?
Well, that was our focus then, but no, everybody's focus went to where the money was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, and what made matters even worse was when this, you know, when everybody, like the first year, the people that grew it, you know, made good money. And, you know, everybody made decent money, real good money.
The first year being?
First year would have been probably 2015.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And because the first year we planted the Denny, the second year, Joe and Josh Stanley, you know, I know those guys, and they said, you know, you need to get, plant CBD this year. So we did. And so that was kind of the thing that got the money rolling. But everybody didn't see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because the first year, you know, it was same thing happened in Canada when they legalized hemp in Canada. And I think that was 97 or 98. They legalized it. And the first year, you had maybe 30, 40 farmers that grew it. And they made great money on the seed. It was a seed crop back then.
Okay.
And the next year, everybody went, oh, look, these farmers made great money. Let's all get into it. So the next year, you had like four or five times as many farmers growing it. And so then you had this glut of seed. And so for about 3 years there, it crashed the hemp seed market, and you had just these bins, grain bins full of hemp all over Canada. And it just filled the market. So it was just history repeating itself, except with CBD instead of the grain market. And so, and you know, I was telling people way before, you know, this was like a year ago in June, I figured, okay, if you give every man, woman, and child in the United States 25 milligrams a day, you know, how much would it, how much would that be in a year? And so I worked backwards and figured how much that would be. And I said, okay, how many acres is growing in Kentucky? And you look at that, and then go on even on the low side of what the production of CBD per acre would be. We were producing enough to for every man, woman, and child in the United States, just in Kentucky. And but on top of that, we've only saturated less than 10% of the market. So we grew enough year before last, or last year, we grew enough that it would have been a 10-year supply for everybody in the United States.
So, well, that certainly isn't good. How does this correct itself? What's the answer?
Well, the answer is we've got to go. It's got to be an agricultural crop if it's going to go mainstream. CBD is going to be like okra or tomatoes, cucumbers. So it's not a crop that you're going to grow on a large scale. Now, people may at some point have the genetics where they can go through there one time and just cut the tops off of it. And if they can figure out a way of extracting something that's not real high in CBD, you know, they may do that. But the real where this crop is really going to shine is in the fiber and the seed areas.
And that's where you'd advise farmers, anybody that perhaps would be listening right now and thinking about getting in this, hearing all kinds of conflicting reports and different farmers with different opinions, you think the fiber side would be the way to go?
Well, the fiber, you can grow fiber and seed together. And, you know, the technology is catching up with it, the industry. And, you know, I'm talking with guys that are now using AI, you know, artificial intelligence, to grade fiber and to, you know, there's just, here's the problem that we've had, Jason. We've been stuck in this chicken and egg scenario that we've been in for since the very beginning. And that is the industry, the final user of it, whether it's car parts or rugs or whatever, they're not gonna touch hemp until they know that they can get a certain quality fiber at and a certain quantity of it.
Right.
They're not gonna do it. Okay. So now the processors, not the end user, but the processor that's going to do the fiber separation, the cleaning, making matting line out of it or whatever, is not going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to build a big facility to process this crop unless he knows two things. One, that the end user is going to guarantee he's going to buy it from him. And the second thing is that the farmers are going to grow it for him.
Right.
Okay. Now you got the farmers. The farmers aren't going to grow anything, well, except CBD, because everybody was telling them they can make 50 to 100 acre. But you're not going to get any farmer now, especially with this bad taste in their mouth that they've lost a bunch of money on the CBD thing. You're not going to get a farmer to grow anything unless he has a contract. And he knows that, you know, he's got to be educated enough on the genetics and what the end use is going to be and what equipment he has to have to, in order to make a successful crop that he knows he's going to get paid for, because he can reach a certain quality and a certain quantity that he can guarantee the guy that's going to be processing it. Mm-hmm. So now you've got everybody standing around going, I don't have a processor. I don't have farmers, and I don't have an end market. And the end market's going, there's nobody out there that can supply this for me. So it's this chicken and egg thing that we've been in, from the very mm-hmm. beginning. And the only way to get out of that is to have the end users, some carpet come in. Inland Carpet was interested in using him. Toyota, Ford, Tesla. We've got to go to them, and we've got to say, look, we're going to give you guys the best PR you've ever got in your life. We're going to give you the opportunity to sign a contract with us that's binding contract, but we have to hit certain specs, and we have to show you that we can supply you with not only specs, but the quantity of product that you want. If you sign that contract, give us 5 years to fulfill it. And then once you have that contract, then you can go to the processor and say, okay, look, if you can do this, we can sell this fiber at this quality, if you can get the quantity there. Then he can go to the farmer and say, look, I've got this contract with them. I'll contract with you guys if you can supply, me with a quality fiber that I'm going to need. And then you got everybody working together and on a 5-year plan, because right now nobody has a plan.
Right. Basically, a roadmap to profit is what's needed.
It's a roadmap to success. I mean, mm-hmm. profit comes after that. But that's the only way, because everybody's sitting around waiting for everybody to do something. And the only way to have it really come out and be a true industry is to get contracts in place. And then it's like setting goalposts up. Once you can reach that goal, then you're there.
Well, now, Joe, we've only got a few minutes left here, and there's so many more questions that I had prepared for you that we're not going to be able to get to. So we do need to wrap this up. But
this is the quickest half an hour that I've spent.
I'm telling you, it is amazing how it flies, isn't it? And again, we could easily go another hour. There's no question about that. And we'd like to have you back, I'm sure, to do a part two, because it's fascinating to discuss, two decades ago. People involved in the hemp industry, but there's so much again to discuss of today and to get your viewpoint, what's going on. So let's wrap it up with the chicken and the egg and your synopsis here you just laid out about a roadmap for success. How do we get to that? The communication between the states, between the countries, how do we, with the farmers, how do we get to that space, and how long do you anticipate that taking?
Well, what we're doing here in Kentucky is we've got the Kentucky Hemp Association. And what we plan on doing is meeting with the Fords here in Kentucky, Toyota's here in Kentucky, and there's some other ancillary companies that can use some of the byproducts of a fiber. So that's, what we're going to do is just start. We're going to meet with these guys and do exactly what I just told you. Mm-hmm.
So is it up to each state to find the industries within their states then to make that happen like you guys would in Kentucky?
Yeah. Well, see, here'd be the difference. In Kentucky, we might be focused on fiber, a certain type of fiber for a certain industry. And somebody up in Wisconsin may be doing hemp seed for a hemp seed oil processor up there, so there might be different parts of the country that will be growing different genetics for different end uses.
Mm-hmm. And it makes sense to keep the product in the state, if at all possible, as opposed to sending it across country, out of the country, that sort of thing.
It's all about rural economic development.
There we go. Once again, Joe Hickey. Joe, it's just a fascinating conversation. Still reeling here about the Woody Harrelson. I just so many other questions I even have about Woody. And one quick one would be, during the time that was all happening with Woody, was he staying in Kentucky? You said he brought his daughter with him, brought his family. Was he not filming anything at that time, or was he coming and going?
No, he was coming and going.
Okay, okay. That just one of the questions I had there that irrelevant, but just an interesting, fascinating story there.
He loves Kentucky, though. He thinks this is probably one of the friendliest places he's ever been in his life.
Is that right? Well, he's probably not too far off in that assumption. So,
well, I always tell people, if I'm going to break down the car, I want to be in Kentucky.
Well, there we go. Well, you're a great ambassador for Kentucky, so I can only imagine. But again, Joe, thanks so much. How can folks get in touch with you? And go ahead and give the website and everything again as well.
Yeah, it's Halcyon Holdings or Halcyon420.com, either one. And
I will say Halcyon is spelled H-A-L-C-Y-O-N Holdings.
Right.
H-A-L-C-Y-O-N Holdings.com.
H-O-L-D-Y, yeah, Holdings, HalcyonHoldings.com or Halcyon420.com. Either one works.
Okay, fantastic. Joe, again, thank you so much, and I do want to get you back here very soon and continue our conversation.
Great. I look forward to it, Jason. Thanks for your time.
All right, take care.
Great talking to you. Bye.
All right, and that's going to do it for this week's show. The Midwest Hemp Council podcast is brought to you by AgroZen Life Sciences. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, please go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, and become a member. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council weekly podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. We'll see you next time, everybody.